Hello and welcome to Outlook from the BBC World Service. I'm Matthew Bannister. We start with the case of Jack Alderman. Before his execution last week by lethal injection, Jack was the longest-serving prisoner on death row in the United States. He'd spent 33 years in prison in the southern state of Georgia after being convicted of murdering his wife when he was 24. The only evidence against him was given by a self-confessed drug addict and alcoholic. Alderman always protested his innocence, and an eminent international law firm had taken up his case, but all appeals for clemency failed. Simone Sandelson is a British artist who developed a close friendship with Jack Alderman after exchanging letters with him for 3 years. She campaigned for a retrial and was with him in the days and hours before the execution. She told me about the experience.
Well, I was very fortunate to be able to spend quite a long time. So, for example, on the Sunday, I was with him for about 6 hours. And then a lot of other people joined in on the Monday. And then I had 3 hours before he was taken away for execution on the Tuesday.
What did you talk about?
I think the thing that struck me most was that he had absolutely no fear of dying. I mean, he felt it was outrageous that he was being killed, but he felt he'd lived the best he could for his life. He felt guilty about nothing. And he felt very loved and supported by a lot of lawyers and friends. And so in a funny way, he was in a good place.
Did he have a powerful faith?
Oh, very much so. But it was his own type of faith. It was everything. It was Jesus and Buddha, and he'd read a lot. He'd read an enormous amount of religious texts and done a lot of degrees in them, actually.
And he was happy to sit and talk for those last 3 hours he died.
First of all, on the Monday, when all the other people came, and they were just, you know, marvellous people who'd supported him for years and years, he basically was consoling them and making sure that they weren't unhappy, because they were weeping and they were saying how much he'd changed their life and how much they loved him. And he was, like, calm and making jokes and completely in charge of the situation. And when I spent the last 2 or 3 hours with him before the execution, he just said, "Do you mind if we say a prayer?" And he invented something that really was to do with, I suppose, how our connection had helped and how blessed he felt.
And then you didn't want to stay for the execution.
No.
What did you do while that was happening?
Well, I had a very adorable friend who came to Atlanta, who lives in New York, and she took me back to New York, and I'm actually a Buddhist, so we went to a monastery and we said prayers for his journey into the next life, really. Mm. And it was quite a positive thing, so I was very happy to be there.
But it must have been a very emotional period for you.
Unbearable.
I suppose it says a lot about the nature of your relationship, which after all started almost randomly, didn't it?
Completely
randomly. By you being
selected
as his pen pal. But it says a lot that he would want you around in those last few hours.
Well, I mean, if you write a lot of letters to people and you find you've got a lot of common ground, there obviously is a connection there.
How did it develop? How did the spark first come in those letters?
I think it was because we both had rather an odd view on spirituality, which actually matched. So I suppose it began with that, and there was a lot of philosophy, and really the case and the whole thing happened much, much later.
Mm. So you started to look into the case, presumably, once you'd got hooked into the letters.
Exactly, and once there was that connection. But I had actually made the decision not to find out what crime he was supposed to have committed, because I didn't really want to judge him before I started communicating.
So you got to know him before you realised that he was a convicted murderer?
Yes.
Right, and when you found out...
No, I knew he would have been a murderer because he was on death row.
Right. So when you started to look into the case,
yes,
how quickly were you convinced of his innocence?
Well, you see, the interesting thing is I'd really got to know him quite well as a person, and I don't think I've ever met anyone with so much integrity and honesty. So actually, by the time I came to read the trial transcripts, which I asked the lawyers for in the end, I was already convinced that he just could never have done it.
Hmm. And how did he describe the process of spending all those years, 33 years, on death row, in the cell, confined? How did he talk about that?
Well, it was interesting, actually, because he said for the first 6 years, he became the monster they told him he was, and he was just angry and furious and didn't want to communicate. And then gradually, I think his spirituality took over, and he realised if he was going to survive, he had to forgive. And he had no bitterness, no anger towards anyone at all at the end. He was only grateful for what people had tried to do for him.
You've brought along one of his letters here, which I think describes the way in which your relationship with him changed him. I might just read a little bit out,
okay,
if you don't mind. Yeah, it says, I was an old ship run aground. For decades, there were groans sitting half in and half out of the water. You noticed prior attempts to salvage. Some had added damage. You did not merely patch a leak. You scrubbed, sanded, blasted and cleaned. You tested pumps and rebuilt engines. I became seaworthy, he says. What is he describing there? What was it that you did that had that impact on him?
Well, I think what I learned in the end was that he was a past master at pretending everything was okay, and he was like funny and he was sweet to everybody. But he told me inside he was completely broken. And I think he's kind of saying that I helped to mend the broken bit inside, mm-hmm. which, you know, it's an amazing privilege to be able to do that. Really.
A lot of people campaigned for clemency, for him to be, at least to have his sentence commuted. Mm. Why do you think that failed? What was wrong with the legal system?
Because he wouldn't admit guilt. He never admitted guilt. I mean, he would never have been on death row if he'd had taken a plea bargaining position in 85, I think. But he just, as I said, he sort of almost has too much integrity. He couldn't say he killed his wife because he loved her.
And even confronted with his own death, did he contemplate
never
changing his plea?
Never. And what's more, he didn't really want clemency because he didn't want to spend the rest of his life in prison.
Mm.
So it was a sort of no-win situation, really.
Now, I gather that he has actually sent you a letter which arrived after he died.
That must
have been an extraordinary experience.
It was very heartbreaking, but it was really, it was a thank you letter, and just to say, you know, that I changed his experience of dying, I suppose.
It must have been very uncanny to have his voice come to you from beyond the grave.
It was really, I found it very, I was very miserable yesterday.
What's been the impact on you of this whole experience?
I suppose I've learnt a lot from him, actually, and I think... trust and truth and things that just seem to be avoided in our normal society have become terribly important to me, and I sort of want to pursue that, really.
I mean, some people are going to say you should shed no tears for this man because he was a convicted murderer.
Absolutely.
He'd been through due process of law and he went to his death according to the laws of the state of Georgia. Mm. What do you say to those people?
Well, I mean, you know, the really sad bit is that we put in for a retrial because we found proper forensic evidence that actually he was never at the scene of the crime. We also found that seven jurors, if they'd known there'd been a plea bargaining with the man who did do the murder, would never have convicted him to death. And none of this was heard. So, you know, I would say to them, why can't they listen to true evidence? Hmm. And to me, that's what's so shocking. Actually, they wanted to kill him.
And you're an artist.
Yep.
Has this provided material for your art?
Probably has. I'm sure the next few months will be very cathartic too.
Do you think that in a way his life was wasted?
Not one bit. It is just extraordinary how many people now know about Jack Alderman. And even in prison, he stopped people committing suicide. He taught people to read and write. Wardens would come to him for personal advice. He shed a lot of light in a very dark place.
Would you carry on campaigning against the death penalty?
Well, I definitely want to tell this story, either through a documentary or a book. I think it's really important that people know.
Simone Sandelson on her friendship with the executed prisoner Jack Alderman. This is Outlook from the BBC World Service. I'm Matthew Bannister.